Rebecca Mercury is an early and tireless advocate for the necessity of transparently tabulated, voter-verified paper ballots. She has spoken before the House Science Committee, the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights, and the Election Assistance Commission. Welcome back, Rebecca. Based on last week, I had more questions to ask you. What's the possibility of a uniform nationwide voting that has all the features that you think should be in it?
Oh, thanks very much for having me back again. Well, that's an interesting question. So why can't we demand that the entire United States all use voter-verified paper ballots and use a similar methodology for voting? Well, it happens to be states' rights. So because of states' rights, the states have their own ability to set all sorts of rules about their elections, and they do vary widely from state to state. And I think the chance of that ever happening in the United States, unless the United States becomes an autocracy or some other horrible things that I hope never happen, but no, that will never happen here because each state likes to have their own methods of voting. And maybe they could all choose the same method independently, but it's sort of like, and I hate to bring it up, but it's sort of like the abortion situation. With the abortion situation, you used to have Roe v. Wade. That would be all the states had to come under that umbrella. For voting, we don't have that, and it's sort of like what's happened now. It was thrown back to the states, and so each state chooses their own methods, and some of the methods are better or worse than others. And some of the methods are biased, as I sort of described in last week's discussion.
Well, that's, you're partially right, because to vote for president, you have to be a citizen of the United States, right? To vote
yes,
for president.
And in fact, I always found that very interesting is that in New York City in particular, I found out that you do not have to be a U.S. citizen to vote for some of the local races in New York. So, but yes, in fact, I guess that's the rule for all of the United States. It's not in the Constitution. Maybe it's some other superseding law, but you won't find anything in there about that you have to be a U.S. citizen in order to vote. But at some point, I guess that became the convention. And I guess it is for president, but for the other down ballot races, whatever the state's rules are, and New York has been more liberal in that respect. Why not? Those people, roads, they need public transit, they need health care, and sure, why can't they vote for the things that are going on in their state or even down to the micro level as to what's going on in their city or counties?
Well, the thing is, we do have at least it's the clear election day uniform for all 50 states, although we do have early voting. Why can't we say that there are certain criteria you have to meet so that it encompasses some security in the voting itself?
Well, and again, I worked on that effort for a very long time. I don't think that every state should have to vote the exact same way. I think it is up to the states to decide how they want to vote. And some states, even as far as Election Day is concerned, you will even be hearing this on the news, is that some states allow the absentee ballots to continue to come in for a few more days. So let's say I realized, oh my goodness, I didn't send in my absentee ballot. As long as I can get it stamped and postmarked, and you need to get somebody to manually postmark it, on that day, they have to accept it. In other words, if it came in and it was passed on election day, but it didn't make it to the county for them to open and count it. So there, some states have that law. Some states say, well, you have to get it in before then. Again, in my state, we have these boxes where you can go, and they're all over the place, but they're very clearly marked as election boxes, and you can put your ballots in there, and they will be taking those out, I believe, at the end of close of voting, which is 8 p.m. in New Jersey. So these are all varied, and everybody has their own custom. Oregon, every single person votes absentee. So how do they get their ballot to the place? Do they have to get them there on time? I don't know what their current laws are, but every state has its own way of voting, and I think that's okay. Those states that want to vote a certain way, they're used to that. Their citizens are used to it. Their grandparents and great-grandparents probably voted the same way as they're voting now, and They just want to keep it that way. And that's okay. But again, as I was working very closely with election officials in the various states, many various states, and also with the Federal Election Commission. Okay, so I have worked closely over the course of many decades with various election officials, local, state, and even federal, and even testified in hearings before Congress and the Federal Election Commission. And the general feeling there is that if they come up with uniform rules, that they used to call them the voluntary standards or the voluntary guidelines, VVSG, I think was one of the abbreviation, voter voluntary standard guidelines or something like that. Anyway, the VVSG were these documents that people had worked on for years and years and years. And they've gotten bigger and bigger, and they're quite voluminous now with all of these rules that you have for how do you prepare voting machines, how do you create them, how do you run the election, stuff like that. But they are voluntary. So each state would have to adopt those voting system guidelines for their election. And not all states do voluntarily do that. But the problem is, and it's similar to even in aviation. So I actually, you know, I'm a computer scientist, so I was actually examining standards and guidelines for what you see in the cockpit of a aircraft. And those are very standardized, even including the typeface, the font, how the panels look. And that's important because if you're a pilot, you don't want to keep going to different planes and everything looks completely different. You want it to be standardized. And so, but these for voting are, for the FAA, those are mandatory. They can make them mandatory. For the voting systems, those are voluntary. And some of the, even some of the guidelines sort of conflict with each other. So, you know, you have a choice of you could do this, you could do that. So it's a very complicated thing. But we could reduce the complication by making sure that all voters have the opportunity to verify a paper ballot, which then could be counted afterwards, and in that method that I was referring to last week as bin sorting, you could do that, and you could actually have that all be recorded. So you can't record how people are voting, but when you get into this open room, I understand that in France they were having so much problems with voting, and they decided to go to this method. So at the end of the day in France, they just take all the ballots, dump them out on the table, they sort them out, and then they count them. Now, if you have multiple races, you have to do it multiple times, but you could just make just the presidential race, or maybe the president, the governor, and the Congress people, make those have to be manually counted. But, you know, if you've got like 40 different races, that's going to be complicated. And it also is very complicated to do it if there's, you know, like three people can get seats like in a some sort of local election. So it's like, you know, you have five to choose from and three people can be picked. It's very difficult to do that manually. You could, but I'm not recommending that. I'm recommending that you have an independent way of counting. You know, this would be secured, that you would count the certain one of N, you know, one person out of some number of choices, races, and then perhaps these other races will be done in a different way. So another way that I've always recommended is that the scanners should not be produced by voting machine companies that are, many of which are very partisan to one particular political party, in fact, and we know this for a fact, it's been going on for, you know, even back to the labor machines. But what we could do is have the scanners be open source and have a way of verifying afterwards that what was scanned actually was correct. And there are groups that are working on open source voting, and they do have these scanners, and that's the type of thing that we should really implement. Not have these scanners be closed source, be done by vendors that are particularly partisan, and that we have no way of validating. And by the way, I should just add this. In California, many people don't know that there are laws on the book that date way back, you know, like into like the 1950s and stuff like this, that make it illegal to actually do a manual counting of votes. So you really want to be careful about this. If you're going to legislate that this is what should be happening, people are going to have to be looking at the laws in their particular state. I testified in a very complicated case where the two candidates had the same exact last name, and that was in California. And there were issues about, can we actually look at the ballots to see whether the ballots were done correctly or improperly? And in that particular county, you could, but in other counties, you could not. So people don't know what laws are on the books, usually until somebody goes and sues. Then there's a lawsuit, and then you find out. So it's not that easy. We can't just snap our fingers and say, okay, everybody should be, like Trump is saying, everybody should be casting the ballots on paper, and then we should be counting them by hand afterwards. It's not that simple. And really, not that I really want to talk to him, but if he wants to talk to me, I'll be happy to talk to him and any of his top aides who are, you know, who are involved with him. I would like to speak to them and explain to them that it's not a very simple thing. Okay.
Rebecca, yes. How about something more modern like internet online voting for president? We file our income tax online with the federal government, and there seems to be no problem with that. Why don't we do that with elections?
Well, you don't know that there's no problem with that. So I don't know that there's no problem with filing our income tax online. I don't file it. I give it to my accountant, and it's his problem. But I know he does file it online. So why can't we do it with elections? Because we'd like to believe that the taxes that they charge us are not controversial. Okay, so when I'm saying, okay, here's how much money I earned, and here's how much tax, now that I've computed it all down, taken all the deductions off, here's how much tax I owe you. It's not a controversy. That's the law. It's the same for everybody. You don't have any choice. Now, if you have a more expensive accountant, you might be able to get them to fudge the numbers a little bit. But, or maybe a lot, if you're Elon Musk or something like that. But as far as voting is concerned, it's controversial. So it is inherently controversial because it's people who are running against each other. And it has always been this way. That's the way it is. So we're always looking at it. It's sort of, I'm not saying warring factions per se, but they're against each other, and there can be multiple parties. And even by siphoning off votes to a third party candidate, that may be enough to reduce somebody down to where if the regular voters had voted for them, they might have won. So it is controversial, and it can be played with, and it can be monkeyed with in a whole variety of different ways. So that brings us to the internet. And so what about the internet, and what about software has been of great concern? Let's just look at the recent example of that CrowdStrike. Okay, CrowdStrike is software that is being used all over the world to run a whole bunch of different things, one of them being the airlines. How you check in, how you get your seats, how they know when to take off, how they know when to land, stuff like that. Okay, so CrowdStrike is software. I'm not saying that everybody is using it, but it's very, very popular. It's also being used with, like, automobile mechanics. So there was a bug in a new release of CrowdStrike that wasn't found in time. They're all supposed to be tested beforehand when they upload. And they shouldn't be uploading to everybody at the same time. That's really a very bad mistake on the part of the way CrowdStrike works. They should phase it in. Try it out in some test areas first. That way you wouldn't have a global calamity. But what happened was it took down all the airline systems. People are standing there. They couldn't get in. They're standing in the line. They couldn't get it to take their ticket, stuff like that. The whole thing just totally broke down in a major calamity. And this is happening all around the world with all of these different types of, I don't really know what to call them other than ubiquitous. It's like ubiquitous software, and it's like an ecosystem of a lot of companies have decided to all use the same software. It's sort of like our phones. You know, we have iPhones and we have Android phones. We have different phones. So depending on if there's a massive problem with iPhones, the people who have Android phones can still make calls. So, And I don't think that Apple, I mean, I don't know for a fact, but I don't think that any of these companies rolls out all their updates at the same time. In fact, I have my updates so that it has to ask me whether I want my phone to be updated. So, but if you're in a system where everybody gets updated on the same minute at one particular time on one particular day, you're going to be looking at that. And that's what we call software monocultures. It's like all of these systems are all very vulnerable at the same time. And so, no, we can't really do that with our voting systems because it would just be a target. Now, again, that was a mistake, but we don't want it to be a target for attack that could bring things down.
But Rebecca, though, not to contradict you, but there are three states or maybe more that allows internet online voting for military personnel.
And that's their prerogative if that's what they choose to do. I don't know if the military personnel also have an option. I mean, I would say that if they also have the option of mailing in their ballot early or having it, you know, shipped from wherever they are, that would be preferable rather than mandating that every single person do that. I don't think it's a good idea because the internet itself is inherently insecure and we don't really know what's going on. I mean, we all know about hacking. We all know about hospitals getting hacked and people getting bills for things that they never ordered or services that were never provided. That even happened to me. That, you know, the medical system in my area was hacked. So I don't like any of those types of things where, again, you have these clones, all sorts of things being done the same way, and then these attacks can pervasively occur throughout multiple different systems. And that's always a vulnerability. So why should we risk that when we have other things available? Nobody uses fax machines anymore, but back in the day, you could actually send faxes. Those would be hard to change, but we don't have that. So we do have internet. If you're creating a paper ballot and then somehow taking a picture of that and then sending that over the internet, probably that's not what's being done. Know how they do it over there. I mean, there are places that people are deployed to where they don't have internet capability. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's good to have options, but I don't really see it as a very safe way to deploy voting systems.
Rebecca, thank you very much for your insight and going to have you back after the elections to see if you may have more to say.
Sounds good.